Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention. With your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper. Tonight, our topic, coaching those desperate for ADHD solutions. And with us in our virtual studio is Kirsten Milligan, sometimes guest, sometimes co-host. We've got a really good show for you tonight. Real quickly, tonight is Wednesday, August the 30th, in the year 2017 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Some quick announcements. The 2017 Annual International Conference on ADHD is InSight. It's this November 9th through the 12th. In Atlanta, Georgia. You can learn more about that conference by going to chadd.org. It's being put on this year by children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and the Attention Deficit Disorder Association Group. Both organizations are nonprofits that advocate on behalf of those with ADHD. Tonight's show is being brought to you by Chad, as they have been for a while. And with that, they have a tip for us that we're going to play, and we'll get into the show. So here we go.
Why are older adults the fastest growing population to be diagnosed with ADHD? Is there such a thing as adult onset ADHD? Get answers to your questions, www.helpforadhd.org. That's www.help and the number 4, ADHD.org.
Thank you, Chad, for your continued support. For those out there who are not aware, Chad is the largest not-for-profit that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD. We encourage our listeners to become members of this incredible organization. They have lots of member benefits if you become a member, but the most important thing is we unite and they speak on behalf of those with ADHD and advocate on your behalf. For those reasons alone, it's worth being a member. There are different memberships based on students, professionals, et cetera. Just go to chadd.org and you can get some more information there. Again, our topic tonight is coaching those desperate for ADHD solutions. Typically, as a coach, we get phone calls from people that are kind of at wit's end, at life transitions, high school to college, college to the workforce, divorce, on probation, at work, on many other things. And we really talk about some of the dynamics of that. We did record this interview with Kirsten Milligan in advance due to some scheduling issues. But with that, we'll roll the tape. We hope you enjoy. We're here with Dr. Kirsten Milligan, who's a dynamic and unique clinical psychologist and certified ADHD coach who lives and works in Portland, Maine. And when I say dynamic, that's like kind of an understatement. She has ADHD and has used her insight and knowledge of ADHD to develop her playful style. Kirsten exposes and plays is the best at non-medication. God, I've screwed this one up already. Anyway,
Can I introduce myself?
Yes, please.
Kirsten is a dynamic and exciting ADHD psychologist and coach. She also has a new podcast that you can find on Facebook Live called Your ADHD Life. And she is the author of the book, Play ADHD, Prescription to Play. How's that? And I live in Portland, Maine with my two fabulous kids and freaky dogs.
There you go. And which website do you want to plug?
And you can find me online at youradhdlife.com and also on Facebook at the same.
There you go. Kirsten, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here to help me with the bio.
Anytime. It's always easier when we say it about ourselves. So
That's right. So it's interesting because today's show, I really want to kind of talk about the mindset of those people who are struggling with ADHD that come to coaching and or really psychologists or therapists. That, you know, often they're really kind of desperate for solutions. And it's interesting to me because there's so much in that mindset when they're coming in. And one of the things that's interesting to me is when they kind of come in and they're absolutely desperate, they're kind of at wit's end. There's this level of pressure that it's almost like, okay, they're putting pressure on whoever they're working with, a coach, a psychologist, and a therapist, to kind of resolve or solve that problem. And you and I have had some conversations about your own experience, both as a psychologist and as a coach, about people coming in desperate and kind of wanting to be fixed and stuff. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. You know, nobody comes in to therapy, or, well, I don't think most people don't come into therapy or coaching when life is going well and they feel like they're handling everything and, you know, everything's coming up roses. They come in when they're having difficulty at work, or, you know, their relationships are, you know, having problems, or, you know, they're having lots of problems with depression, with their kids, with whatever. And so they do come in some level of crisis. And wanting relief from whatever that crisis or stress is that's happening in their life. And that feels like this, you know, emergency for them. And helping them to change their mindset from, you know, fix what's wrong with me now, to help me manage over, you know, going forward, now. So that they don't keep having recurrent crises. So, you know, the first job is really, you got to understand, you got to know something about them. You've got to learn about them. You've got to help them learn about themselves. And then you've got to start doing experiments, whether it's in therapy or coaching, about what's going to work for them. So it's a big learning process. It's not a short-term, three-session, you're going to be fixed kind of thing.
Well, the what's interesting about this is, before I met you, I would always articulate to people coming to coach, I need you to take the pressure off of yourself. I need you not to be desperate, which is hard. Yeah. I mean, it's hard, but the idea really is, as I would say, is that the job to me of the defense in sports is to put pressure on the offense. And the reason they do that is it inhibits performance. And I also learned over the years that pressure takes you right back to habitual behaviors, things that you just always do kind of automatically. In other words, pressure takes you back to what you think you should do. And it's really kind of oppressive. And I was never able to really articulate it. But over the years, I've sent you some texts when we started talking about play a little bit, because I began to realize play is like the opposite of pressure. And that playful mindset actually opens you up, and you actually can discover new things, maybe creative things that would work, that you couldn't think about in that pressure. We've done a lot of shows on Attention Talk Radio and a ton on Attention Talk Video illustrating like freaky things that really work for people that are not necessarily mainstream. And so it's interesting, because people come in with a lot of pressure on themselves, desperate, yet what's interesting to me is they actually need the opposite. They need to let go of the pressure and be playful, to be creative, to find solutions that are outside of what they've been looking at. Because after all, if the obvious solution and just trying harder would have worked, it would have worked by now. So you just want to comment on that, share your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I can remember when you and I started working together, when I was going through my mentor coaching program, and one of the fabulous things I thought you said to me as a client with you was, you know, you have to take the pressure not only off yourself, but you have to take the pressure off me. If you expect me to give you the answer, that's too much pressure. And I can't bring my A game if you put that much pressure on me. We both have to, you know, be able to play, essentially play with this and, you know, see what works. And sometimes I'm going to say the wrong thing, and sometimes, you know, whatever. So
I like how you said that, because that is in fact the first conversation I have with everybody when I'm working with them is, number one, you got to take pressure off yourself, but I'm going to ask for permission to fail so I can take pressure off of myself so I can get wildly creative. And if I screw it up, I screw up. Now, I'm not asking for failure over the long haul of our work, but at different time to do that. And I think it's important, because when people do come to coaching or therapy or whatever, and they're feeling that pressure and they're kind of locked in, I know the ones that have the most pressure, I'll tell them, I can't help you unless you just chill on yourself. Because again, you just go into this fight, flight, or freeze mode, and you just get paralyzed, and you just kind of sit there, and you're wanting me to fix you or give you the magic pill, and it really just kind of doesn't work that way. And I think a lot of people expect to come into this environment really for whoever they're going to set the agenda and tell them what's going on. And there's some people that do that, but I don't find it to be very successful. To me, really the ones where you kind of walk in and literally it's a learning, growing kind of creative environment, which again, I give you credit, Kirsten, it really goes back to play. It sounds counterintuitive, but that's the way out.
It really is. It really is. You know, it's interesting because as you were saying that, I was thinking there are some people who are in perpetual crisis. And
yep.
coaching with them is really difficult. And, you know, one of the first clients I remember you were mentoring me with somebody who was like that. And I kept saying, you know, coaching is not really going to work for this person. They just wanted the answers. They weren't able to generate their own solutions because they couldn't take themselves out of crisis enough for their brain to engage in that more creative problem solving, which when, you know, we're in amygdala hijack, when we're in that high state
yep.
of emotionality, you know, everything's being filtered in a different way. It's not coming through to the prefrontal cortex so that we can think things through and plan and organize and problem solve. And it's, I mean, it's just yep. the way human beings are, and being emotional creatures and more emotional with ADHD, it can be even more difficult. So, we really need people to be in a different mindset.
And I'm gonna try to articulate this, and maybe I need your help with this. But I find that people come in, they have like pre-programmed like thoughts, language, and things locked in on. And it's funny because I've actually had people who came in and I forbid them to read any more books or do some stuff because they were always trying to be like the book. They were never like kind of pay attention to who they are. And this is a metaphor, everybody. This is guys go like one is to two is A is to B. So if you follow my logic here, one of the things that I have fun with, Kirsten, was people come to me, particularly early on, we usually talk about procrastination. And my favorite is, and this is an illustration of the automatic language and thought process. And what I've learned from basic observation that's really different, and it's funny because of this, is they'll come in and they'll give me something that they're procrastinating on. And often I love the ones, well, I just need to make a phone call. And I go, what's hard? And they go, nothing's hard. It's just a phone call. And I go, listen, it's on your procrastination list. You brought it here. We're talking about it. Did you scratch yourself this morning? Did you wake up? Did you go to the bathroom? Did you eat something? Oh, yeah, yeah. So you didn't procrastinate about that, right? Those were easy and you were there. You're not doing this. So what's hard? And it's funny because they'll argue with me. And invariably, I'll start asking them some questions and we'll start digging into it. And it might be as simple as, is like there's one guy I coached one time, and I've told this story a lot, where he had to call the relatives to tell about his kids' like dance recital or something like that. And we began to unravel what was really hard was that when he would call them up, they would all ask a bunch of questions like, where do we park? What do we wear? What do we bring? Stuff like that. He would never have the answers. Then he'd have to go back to his wife, who was upset because she had tasked him with these things before to begin with. So now he's got this fight, flight, or freeze because he doesn't want to go that. And then she's got to tell him he's got to make all these phone calls. So as we unravel that, it's much more complicated than just that, oh, it's an easy thing. And again, it's
right.
that thing of trying to get them to shift that mindset because there's so much pressure. Like, this is easy. It should be easy. And as I've been saying lately, it's not until you actually acknowledge that it's hard that you give it its due and actually pay attention to it. And as an aside, it's kind of funny. In asking that question, the guy actually began to activate very quickly after that, because everything that he had to make a phone call, he said, well, what's hard here? And then he would get to the root of it and kind of resolve it. So anyway, again, my point really is when you come in, there's so much automatic behavior, automatic beliefs, automatic responses and stuff like that. And if you don't stop and listen, you can't get them to see what kind of reality is. And that is the mindset when they're coming in desperate. As a coach, I know on our side, it's so you got to receive that and somehow ask the questions to get them to kind of turn that ship to make it happen. So we need to go to break real quick, but I just want to give you something. You have anything to add to that?
I'm going to add it after break.
All right. So, Kirsten, the new website.
YourADHDLife.com. It's the old website. It will be a new one in September. But for now, you can find me still there and also on Facebook at facebook.com/YourADHDLife.
And with that, we'll be right back after these questions. Messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that get smaller as time passes. To place an order for a time timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Kirsten Milliken, sometimes guest, sometimes co-host. Thrilled to have Kirsten here for with us for the show because we've got a great topic. Kirsten, you know, I was coaching somebody one time, and we kind of got to the end of and we're wrapping some stuff up, and they started talking about the coaching process, and they said, you know, it was kind of strange because I came to this a little desperate for, you know, some help, and I really didn't expect that I was going to be the one leading us through this. I mean, I really thought the coach would do this or, you know, whatever. And she said it was kind of weird, but it was almost like you were just kind of winging it. And I said, yeah, well, that's what coaching really is. It's improv. It's basically kind of letting you go and asking questions to kind of shift your attention. And she said it was a little strange because at first it was unnerving, but then she felt it a couple times when she succumbed to the question and she began to listen to it, that she noticed that that's actually how she was kind of figuring out. And I think I thought she articulated that real well for somebody. You come in thinking that we're going to set the agenda and tell you what to do, but we really don't. We kind of like follow it and really kind of wing it. And it's not till you let go and play that the Socratic method, as she described me, which is kind of interesting, kind of takes root and kind of takes hold. So it's funny because as I articulate to other coaches sometimes, it's really improv. And it's strange because it's not the mindset I think people necessarily think they got. So it's kind of powerful. Now, you've been a psychologist and you also work as a coach. And your experience going back and forth, are you really winging it as a psychologist or is there a difference?
Well, first of all, I don't think as a coach or as a psychologist any of us wing it. I mean, it's kind of – and like being an improv actor, they don't wing it either. I mean, there are rules in improv. And you stay within those rules and you play the improv games like any game, right? If you're really
yep.
playing it, you are following the structure that's set for you and then you're engaging as fully as you can in it, having fun. And some of that is, you know, you take whatever ball comes at you, you take whatever your partner in the scene says to you and you apply the rules, but then you come back with something that is funny or you hit the ball or whatever it is. So it might look like winging it, but underneath it all, there's a framework that holds it. And I think
I was just going to say, my wording was poorly chosen. You're spot on. I mean, thanks for pointing that out because there is
Absolutely.
A structure that's there. So I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was like, thank God she did that. So keep going.
And so I think, there's a lot of differences between being a psychologist and being a coach. And one is, you know, people come to a psychologist, you're a doctor. They come, you're the expert in the room. And that model, in my opinion, in so many ways doesn't work because no matter how much education I get, even if I only specialize in ADHD or in depression, everybody's ADHD or depression looks a little bit different. And the things that work for them or the things that trigger them are all going to be a little bit different. And so to have that, for lack of a better word, arrogance to think that getting 8 years of getting a doctoral degree makes me qualified to be an expert on everybody that comes in my office is kind of silly. And it puts a lot of pressure on me. It's not really fun.
Yep.
It's a lot of work. And so I transitioned over to coaching, and I had actually been doing some motivational interviewing, and I've always used cognitive behavioral styles, which are more along the lines of coaching. But I love the coaching where, you know, your client comes in and right off the bat, you are co-creating the process. And the only expert in the room is the client, because they've lived with themselves, but they're not always paying attention to things the right way or in a way that, or they're also not aware of other options because they've got a narrow range of experience. So sometimes it's about, you know, cluing them into the fact that there might be other ways to look at things or inviting them to go find other ways. So it really is helping the person to see inside themselves as opposed to imposing my knowledge on them.
So this is a pretty far out there example, but I think I'll illustrate, and I can only go into part of the story because at some point in time, the person came to me and said they got what they needed out of coaching in a very positive way. So one of the things that I've worked with people, Kirsten, on is like reminders and remembering to do certain things, maybe certain things at a certain time. And, you know, some of the pat answers are sometimes, you know, put something visual out or some type of a reminder or some type of an alarm. And that alarm can be a buzzer or it can be like a pop-up on your Outlook or your computer, stuff like that. I mean, those are the common things that are out there. But, you know, over the years and being curious about people, I've come to realize it's that different senses really catch people's attention in different ways. Like for me, smell, I smell things, but it's, I'm probably, when I walk into a room and something smells, I'm more muted than somebody else where maybe sound kind of captures my attention. And I was working with people at different times on these reminders. And one woman in particular kind of came up because I was just listening to her asking questions about the process. Again, she came in looking for some solutions and smell was huge on her list. I mean, it stood out like she had a lot of difficulties, like even going into public buildings at different times or some rooms, if there was a bad smell, she couldn't go into it. And we started experimenting around with smell-based reminder systems.
Mm.
We were playing around with crayons that smelled and different things. And it was becoming I mean, she was getting excited about it because different like scents would remind her of different things. And I've described this before to kind of help people get it. As I was coaching a woman one time who was auditory. And so she would put reminders and would like these buzzers would go off or on her phone and stuff to remember stuff. But after a while, she became like immune to it because it was the same sound and she had a lot of reminders pinging on her phone. But we began to realize is that we would set a reminder for stuff and we would change the ringtone. Like if it sounded like a washing machine, it was to get the clothes out of the washer and put them in the dryer. If it was a dog barking, it was to feed the dog. And what was interesting was the auditory stuff got her attention. The visual didn't, but she had so many of them that she needed distinctions to discern those two. And it was revolutionary for her. So going to the smell-based type thing, again, we didn't get very far into it because she really seemed to get excited about it and was playing it. And Lily, she came back with – she had these scratch things that she put like index cards. She described them to me. It was kind of strange. But in that particular situation, that's an illustration of how – I have no idea what worked for her. But they came in. They took the pressure off. And rather than an alarm or visual-based reminder system, it seemed like a smell-based reminder system was really working for her. And she went on to kind of develop that – I'm presuming from what I heard, because she literally came in like, this is great. I think I've got this thing figured out. And these are types of things that you kind of can't figure out just from the normative solutions in the books, because this is an outlier. I probably will never see that again, but it really worked for them. So that's, I think, one of the differences is if you're following them and asking the questions, you can discover these types of things as opposed to just trying to do something harder that might not work. So that resonate with you?
Absolutely. I was just talking with a client today, talking about the fact that, you know, one of the things I love being a coach is I can say things like what I'm about to say, which is, you know, my clients making progress and us discovering things that work for them so that they can move forward is like entertains me. And as a coach, the best way to keep me engaged as your coach is to entertain me. So, you know, so engaging in that process of figuring things out and experimenting with things and getting creative is so exciting as opposed to prescribing something for somebody.
Yep.
Here's how you should do this, or this is what works for other people. You know, asking those questions and getting the person in front of you to own their process and, you know, how they're going to do something and what they want the outcome to be is just, it's so much more exciting for them and also I think for me as a coach.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I got a great example that I want to kind of share that actually is our YouTube video we got. So let's go to break real quick. You want to roll the tape one more time on the website?
Absolutely. So right now you can find me at youradhdlife.com and also on Facebook at facebook.com/youradhdlife.
And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. Kirsten Milliken having a conversation about people coming to coaching being desperate. And before the break, I think Dr. Milliken really kind of articulated this in a very way, just the us discovering and entertaining her a bit and not going with a prescribed methodology. And a fun experience I had one time was I was working with a woman who was struggling with time management, and we were just kind of going along. I said, well, what do you think? She said, I think maybe a timer will help. So she ran out and got a timer, and a week later she said, it's really been helping. I said, well, okay, that's kind of great. And about the next call, 2 weeks later, she said, it wasn't working so good. I said, really, why? She said, well, I think I'm getting kind of bored with it. And I go, huh. Well, what's the obvious next step? I didn't say what's the obvious answer. I said, what's the obvious next step? Not knowing where we were going with that. And she said, well, I guess I should get another timer, which kind of caught me by surprise. I'm like, another timer? Like, this one got you bored, like whatever. So she goes and gets another timer, and she comes back a week later. Oh, it's going good. And a week later, it's not going so good anymore. And I go, all right, so well, what's the next obvious next answer? She says, to get another timer. And I'm like laughing in my mind, kind of go, all right, I'm following this. So as time goes on, she gets this collection. She's got like a time timer. She's got this thing that jumps and hops. She's got this puzzle that explodes. She's got a sand timer, an egg timer. She's got all these kind of timers. And after a while, I didn't hear much about the timers. And I said, hey, what's the scoop? Is that, you know, we were getting bored of the timers. She said, yeah, what I do is I just, whenever I get bored, I get a new one, but now I rotate them. And I said, what?
Yep.
Yeah, I rotate them. Like, I'll use this one this day, that one, that day. And I was like, it struck me. I was like, are you serious? So we actually shot a video with her. If you go to YouTube and go Attention Talk Video Timer, it'll come up. It's the woman in the blonde, and she's still using that today, by the way. And the reason I like this, Kirsten, is it's not a prescribed solution for time management. But what's fun to me is I've been to some conferences, and I've told other mental health professionals that, and they look at me like I got two heads, and they're like, well, I mean, it's not – you can see in their eyes they wouldn't prescribe multiple timers. It would just like you got to adhere to that timer. And you look at them, they're kind of surprised by it. Like I was surprised when it was unfolding. But it goes back to the what we've been talking about is if you let go of the pressure and you open up that creativity and we ask the questions, and literally this individual is the one who came up with it. It's a really clever system that works for her, not for everybody. But you kind of can't get there with just a typically prescribed – here's one size kind of fits all, which is, I think, the fun of all this. And what I'm hoping is adjusting the mindset of those going into coaching is that I know you're desperate. I know you got that fight, flight, or freeze response. But if you just relax and play, which Kirsten's
right.
All about, she's taught me all kinds
right.
of stuff about that. The secret really is in that creative play, not giggly play. I mean, you can do that, but the fun type stuff. And at the end of the day, it can be entertaining for everybody, which is, I think, getting back to kind of what you're talking about. It's fun to coach and it's fun to create.
Yes, it is.
Once you let go.
And it's fun to discover all the different ways that people can do things.
Yep.
But yeah. And I think part of that playing too, I keep thinking is, you know, people come in with their mindset around, you know, I shouldn't do it this way, or, you know, it's ridiculous to have 10 timers, whatever. But once you say, so what? If it works for me, it works. Why do I have to stick with the same one every day? If having 10 of them means that I have choices and it keeps me going, then do that. Who cares if your neighbor thinks it's weird that you've got 10 timers? You know, it works for you, and that's what you're looking for. So, I love the ways people do things.
And I'm going to just kind of translate this, because I love what she said. Just so what? Well, here's the deal is, if you say so what and it works, isn't that so much better? Just so what? I do it my way. So I use 10 timers, or David works. Yeah. So I rock in my rocking chair, and when I study, I sing my notes to she'll be coming around the mountain when she comes. Or like Roberto Olivardia, who reads 7 times faster riding the subway, and that's what he does. He gets on the subway and rides it back and forth. So what? I do it that way. It's what works for me, and I'm productive that way, and I'm kind of getting – you know, I'm able to pay attention to my intentions that way and kind of make it happen. So that so what is not just a blind faith so what. It's a so what for productivity and peace of mind. I really like
happiness.
That. Let's turn I should
happiness
into so what. That's right. That's right.
Oh, I love that.
Anything left to touch base on this topic before we close things out?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I was going to say earlier was really what we're doing is helping clients go from, paying attention to everything outside of themselves and how things are going, and paying attention to their own process. So, you know, this isn't working. There's something wrong. Okay, so, you know, think about what it takes to get things to work with your client. I apologize. I lost my train of thought for a second there, but you were talking about a client earlier that basically just needed to pay attention to what the process was of having to make a phone call. That's what it was.
Yes.
And
yes.
Once you got past just saying it's easy, which is what everybody would say about a phone call, to actually paying attention to what happens when it comes to making that phone call, you get so much more information to work with and to do better. So, that's part of what we're doing. And again, it's a process. So, and it can be a fun one. It can be so much fun.
It was a fun process to witness this girl's process to see that, hey, the way my process manages time, I like the auditory alarms, but I get bored. I'm going to rotate them through, which is a different process than what most people do, but it works for her, which, again, it's a blast. And the examples that I've showed, I couldn't make this stuff up. This is all real stuff. And that's what's the fun, entertaining part. And it's actually fun, Kirsten, to come on with you and talk about this stuff. So it's entertaining all the way around.
It is. I hope everybody else has had as much fun listening as we've had talking.
Absolutely. The last thing, everybody, is when you're up against the wall and you have a lot of pressure, I'm not trying to minimize that it's easy to downregulate your emotions, especially for those with ADHD. But if you're not even realizing, it's counterintuitive, but the more you can play, the higher the probability that you're going to kind of move forward. If you're looking towards that, it does make it easier for you to downregulate other than just the sake that you got to do it. So with that being said, Kirsten, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jeff. Happy to be here.
Everybody, check out our website, youradhdlife.com. We hope you've enjoyed us. Catch us next week for another edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.